Going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Insight Segment. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Well, we often discuss the school-to-prison pipeline for black boys, but there is an alarming surge in girls moving from school to prison. The criminalization of black girls is quite alarming. The suspension rates are up, as well as documented abuses. Tonight, we're talking about a new documentary that is out called Push Out, The Criminalization of Black Girls in Schools. And we're going deep into the conversation of how we can sort of help and discuss and resolve issues that many school systems are dealing with. Joining us tonight to help further this conversation is Dr. Bahia Muhammad, assistant professor with the Department of Sociology and Criminology and the program director of Howard University's Inside Out program. On the phone line with us is Monique Moore. She is the executive producer of the film that we are focusing on tonight, Push Out, again, the criminalization of black girls in schools. And Rebecca Epstein, researcher with the Georgetown Laws Center on Poverty and Inequality. We'd like you to join the conversation. Again, the phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Monique Morris, we're going to start with you, executive producer of the film Push Out. I watched the documentary. It was stunning on what I saw, what I heard. Tell us on what you found and why you believe the incidents and the issues that you've had addressed aren't new to the school system, but why some of us may be just hearing about them.
Well, thank you first for having me on to talk about this. I first came to this information really probably about 10 years ago, but it was in my deep doctoral study that I discovered that there were trends that were worthy of inquiry and things that we really need to begin to explore as more than just isolated incidents, but really to demonstrate that there was a pattern affecting girls the way that we were seeing patterns affecting boys. You know, there has been a tendency in our communities, you know, certainly to talk about conditions as we see them manifest publicly, and a lot of the public violence that we see affecting black boys, I think, began to skew our perception of what was happening with black girls. There was this narrative that we only needed to focus on black boys, and that was happening in many communities to the exclusion of what was happening with black girls. 3 years ago, when I wrote the book Push Out, The Criminalization of Black Girls in Schools, I wrote about what was happening across the country, how we needed to explore this issue more deeply, how we could collect information and data that help us better understand what's happening. And I talked to girls who had experienced this exclusionary discipline, the suspensions, the expulsions, the arrests on campus, the ways in which they were experiencing policies, practices, and a way of thinking about their own identity that would render them vulnerable to contact with the juvenile court or criminal legal system. And it actually forced many of us into new conversations about sexual assault. It forced many of us into conversations about dress code policies. It forced many of us into conversations about justice beyond what so many of us were accustomed to using as our common framework around these issues. And so I'm grateful to the girls who shared their stories with me and happy that we have not only been able to document this in our emerging research and work in the field in this domain, but also that I was able to put it into a documentary so that folks could also see girls tell their own stories and explore this issue more deeply with us.
Dr. Muhammad, what is the essence of a lack of understanding? Should there be a different approach when we're talking about young girls? There are different issues than boys. You have young girls sometimes who are going through hormonal changes that may affect their reaction to things, their moods to things. Does there need to be a greater understanding of the difference, and especially when we're talking about young girls of color, as this documentary focused on?
Absolutely. I think specifically if you think about the incarceration population, right now we have the quickest population that's filling correctional institutions across the nation, and detention facilities are Black women and Black girls. And so those are voices that are often shepherded into these different spaces and places and never have the opportunity to share their narrative. We know from research that we've identified that boys act out and girls act in. And so it's almost this concept that they could deal with it, that they're strong enough to experience it, kind of like that mammy perspective of being so strong and being resilient almost to the point where it erases your humanhood and what it is in terms of support that you need. I think all voices should be heard. I think that young girls can speak directly for themselves. Me specifically, in the work that I do in carceral spaces, I hear the voices of young girls through grown women. And so a lot of what they've experienced growing up and coming up really leads to this trajectory that ends up being the criminal justice system remanding them for a lot of things that happened during childhood. Oftentimes, when you think about the super predator myth, there's this focus on masculinity and Black boys and really thinking about their dehumanization and the things that they haven't been granted, and the young girls are hidden underneath that structure, but are definitely willing and able to share their stories.
Dr. Muhammad, you mentioned some of the statistics, and we see here from the Juvenile Detention Alternatives Initiative, they found in 1992 Black girls comprised 29% of all girls with juvenile court cases. In 2002, the number was 30%, and by 2009, it was 40%, to sort of support your point. Rebecca Epstein, researcher with Georgetown Law Center on Poverty and Inequality, in your research, what are you seeing here? Does poverty and inequality play a role and the issues on how Black girls are dealt with in school?
It certainly does. And I would emphasize also, to build on your last question, that while the numbers are alarming, this isn't a new pattern at all. And instead, not paying attention to girls of color is part of the silencing of girls of color that we have throughout our culture. So the pathways that they're taking into the juvenile justice system and that the ways in which they're being pushed out of schools are unique. And it's not a hormonal issue, right? These girls are being marginalized. They haven't been heard. And so we need to pay attention to their stories in order to develop solutions that are tailored to girls' real life experiences.
And is it easy to just say if it's hormonal or the young girl is going through this time of the month? Is that too much of an easy fallback? Is kind of that what you're getting at there?
No. So what we're focusing on is what girls' lived experiences are. And a lot of the times, for example, we're finding that there's a sexual abuse to prison pipeline. This is about the treatment of girls and the sexual violence of that they're experiencing and that they're criminalized for. So if a girl misses school, she can, through a certain loophole in the law, be put into the system for truancy. And that's the kind of thing we're talking about, where these are unique pathways rooted in sexual violence, rooted in the lack of understanding of girls' unique experiences that we need to understand better, identify in our schools, and address.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Tonight, we're talking about the criminalization of Black girls in schools. That's the title of a new documentary, Push Out, the criminalization of Black girls in schools. Monica Morris is the executive producer of that documentary and also the author of the book by the same name. Monica, or Ms. Morris, I thought one of the there were so many things really to pull out about the documentary, but I thought one of the things that was emphasized about the term adultifying young Black girls, right? These young girls, but how they're viewed in many ways through the prism of seeming like they're adults. Can you talk a little bit about that and the impact of that?
Yes. First, I will say that my name is Dr. Monique Morris.
Oh, I'm sorry. What did I say? I said Monica. I'm sorry, Dr. Morris.
I will say a couple of things. I'm glad that Rebecca pointed out that this is not about hormonal developments as much as this is about racialized gender bias. that this is about people being unable to fully recognize and explore the range of emotions and learning styles and responses to trauma among Black girls that they easily recognize among other girls and sometimes other boys across the spectrum. I think it's important to explore that what we're talking about with Black girls and what we're trying to call attention to here is precisely this point that you are raising around adultification. What we're trying to do is elevate and demonstrate using our research and also the narratives that girls themselves will share and that is nothing new to Black women across the country, that Black girls are routinely experiencing what I have called an age compression, where they're younger than adults perceive them to be. Now, adults may perceive Black girls to be older than they actually are for a host of reasons that Rebecca's organization, the Center on Poverty and Inequality, has been able to document through their study, really building out what I offered in the book Push Out. But we are also exploring this concept in the documentary around how Black girls are seen as more adult-like, what that means when educators perceive them as more adult-like, and what the greater impact is in our society when we perceive girls as being more adult-like. Rebecca, who can certainly speak to her, the details of her own study best, but the study that she and Dr. Jamelia Blake did really demonstrate that Black girls begin to experience this variance or this perception of them as being older than they actually are when they're as young as 5 years old, and that this disparity peaks when they're between the ages of 10 and 14. When you think about Black girls being perceived as older than they are between the ages of 10 and 14, that, when you do an overlay, is also a key period in their development. That is when they are at highest risk of childhood sexual assault. That is when they are at highest risk of commercial sex trafficking. That is when they are at highest risk of being in schools with zero tolerance policies or with dress code policies that have adults reading their bodies and the way their bodies appear to them in specific clothing. So we have a lot of conversation in D.C. and beyond about how this adultification plays into how adults, particularly adults on campus, are interfacing with our girls.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our topic, the criminalization of Black girls in schools. Dr. Muhammad, within the documentary, one of the things also that stood out to me, one of the comments was oftentimes teachers and administrators in schools may look at young Black girls or young girls of color and see them as those who can't be harmed. And I was wondering if you could go a little deeper with that on the perception of girls of color not being harmed. Is it that we see them as being stronger than they actually are, being that different?
I think ultimately, and we discussed this in my juvenile delinquency class today, that a lot of the images that are projected on Black women are foreshadowed onto the younger Black girls. And so you start to find that strong Black woman kind of philosophy being shown upon these younger individuals. When students specifically spoke in class today about their personal experiences, it really was from a place of harm and disregard. They felt that individuals did not necessarily see them as being strong and, you know, worthy of solving this on their own, but that these issues that they are facing are unsolvable, that they weren't worth going that extra route, that these are issues that they would have to deal with on their own, similar to an adult. So I think it goes back to the adultification or age suppression of these younger individuals to kind of say that they could just deal with it. One of the students today, specifically a female, Black female in the class, talked about how she was from a single parent home and her mom gave her a lot of responsibility. So there were things that she would help out with in the classroom and ways that she could help resolve conflict between a teacher and maybe another student. But she still was a young girl. And so when issues were faced or came up within the class on bullying, it was kind of like, you got this, you know, you could, you do this and deal with this without hearing from or about her story. She was very insecure, coming up, and there were just things that, and opportunities and times that she just felt that she wanted someone to lean in and to hear her and to help her help herself.
Still too much and still much to talk about or on this conversation. If you're on the phone line, stay there. Sanjay will get to you when we come back on the other side. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm with Jeff Brown is next on 96.3 WHUR, 202-319-7810. Again, we'll continue this conversation on the other side on Sirius XM Channel 141.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Tonight, our conversation is focusing on a new documentary and a book that is out, Push Out, The Criminalization of Black Girls in Schools. The pipeline, really, from school to prison, and our focus is on girls. Often we focus on males, especially black males, and tonight our focus is on predominantly African-American girls and the issues around the criminalization of young black girls in school. Joining us for this conversation in studio is Dr. Bahia Muhammad. She's an assistant professor with the Department of Sociology and Criminology and program director of Howard University's Inside Out program. On the phone line with us is Monique Morris, executive producer of the film Push Out, The Criminalization of Black Girls in Schools. And in studio with us is Rebecca Epstein, a researcher with Georgetown's Law Center on Poverty and Inequality. We'd like you to join the conversation, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go to the phone lines, and Sanjay calling from Suitland. Go right ahead with your question or your comment.
Hey, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. So my comment I want to say about the criminalization of young African-American females, I feel as though that's been going on for a long time, Not to the story, the problem is, the fact is basically, number one, race. The thing is, like, they criminalize, they did the school to prison pipeline because, you know why? Because they want to fill up the, they want to fill up the jailhouse. That's the thing.
Well, that's...
And it's all because of, like, 13th Amendment. You remember the 13th Amendment said they abolished all slaves, but it has a clause under it. It has a clause. I don't remember. I can't hold it word for word.
I think I know what you're talking about, Sanjay, at some point. I don't know if that clause, that loophole has been closed. He's talking about the 13th Amendment when they abolished slavery, but there was still a clause in there saying if you violated some law, you could sort of still be enslaved. But he's got a viewpoint of thinking that the system, if I'm sort of interpreting what he's saying, is rigged to kind of fill these prisons because it's become an economic system for many communities. But I also want to talk, Rebecca, and especially in your research, within the documentary, one of the issues that was brought up was that maybe some of these teachers are afraid of these young girls. Have you found that to be true? Is that a large issue that has to be dealt with?
Absolutely. And that goes back in part to what's been raised earlier about some of the stereotypes, the harmful stereotypes that historically have been applied to black women and are now increasingly being projected onto black girls. And one of those harmful stereotypes is the angry black woman. And so we're hearing from black women and girls about their experiences with teachers immediately perceiving black girls' behavior as threatening, so much so that it can escalate what might be a disagreement or other kind of behavior altogether into one that not only might end up with being sent to the principal's office, but might even involve police officers and being excluded from school altogether. So it's very much the case that research has shown that black girls are more harshly punished for the kinds of offenses that are up to the interpretation of the enforcer. So if a teacher finds a student to be disrespectful or disobedient, that's going to fall more harshly on black girls. And the numbers bear that out. And actually, the difference in those kinds of violations between black and white girls is greater than the difference between black and white boys. So it's really black girls that are uniquely experiencing the harm of those particular stereotypes.
Why do you think this is, and you correct me if I'm wrong, it would seem there's a sense that this is being underplayed. I know we talked earlier about a large emphasis has been on the boys. Why do you think there's not been as much of an emphasis on young black girls? I'll open up to anyone, even to Ms. Morse.
There are a host of reasons why we haven't fully explored what was happening with girls. I will say about 10 years ago when I first started raising this, we were told, and the community of us who were involved in this work were told that that the numbers were too small for there to be a serious inquiry in this space. So in a lot of ways, because girls' numbers were not as large as boys' numbers, there was this misperception that there was no harm or not enough harm to build a movement in response to it. What's interesting, you know, we see that girls across the board, regardless of racial identity, get in trouble in schools in fewer numbers than boys get in trouble in schools. But in some of our largest jurisdictions across the country, as Rebecca was starting to share, we see that, you know, in many spaces, it's black boys who are experiencing the highest levels of exclusionary discipline, followed by black girls, followed by other boys, then other girls, which tells us that the racial disparity is so great among girls that black girls are actually showing up among the boys. And that goes back to the point that your caller just raised, right, that this is not something new and that it is a manifestation of racial bias, but it's a racialized gender bias for black girls, because not only is it about the fact that they are black, it's, as Dr. Muhammad was sharing, that they are also girls who are perceived to have it together, or this perception that they should have it together, and if they don't have it together, then the punishment is more severe for infractions that are typically, you know, minor, like chewing gum or, you know, putting, you know, in some cases, raising, questions in the classroom or speaking out of turn, things that might be associated with, you know, normal adolescent, pre-adolescent behavior then become reason for them to be removed from the classroom. And one of the things that I'll say, you know, with this, why we haven't seen girls really show up in our narrative, too, is because so much of our dominant discussion about this issue was fueled by a privileging of the experiences of boys, meaning because their numbers were so large, we were starting to frame the issue in a way that really spoke to the needs of boys rather than fully understanding what was happening with girls. The other thing is that the data were not available for us for years, that we couldn't track what was happening with black girls, because the way that data would be reported, it would be reported by race and then by gender. It was never presented in a way that would allow us to look at what was happening by race and gender. And it wasn't until we were able to do that, that we were able to see that black girls, like black boys, were experiencing many of the negative outcomes associated with zero tolerance policies, policing in schools, you know, really harsh dress code enforcement policies, and other ways in which the school system was becoming increasingly carceral.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. The phone lines are open. If you have a question or comment about this topic, if you've had an experience, maybe a young girl, you become older, And you've had to deal with sort of a different approach to you as a student, whether it was elementary school, middle school, high school, even college. We want to hear from you. Even if you're a parent, you've had to deal with that, and we've seen that, or we saw that, rather, in the documentary Push Out. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Muhammad, at the program that you run Inside and Out, right, you take university students into the prison system, right, and you talk with prisoners. What do you think the students are learning? And are they talking to male and female prisoners?
Absolutely. The program started in 2016. We went into New Beginnings Youth Development Center. It was my regular juvenile delinquency class that I taught inside of the correctional facility. In this particular case, the detention facility, half of the individuals were detained youth, both male and female, and Howard University students from freshmen to seniors, male and female. And what we talked about were juvenile delinquency, the history of the system, what the system looks like, how it grew, where did we get juvenile justice from in the first place. I find that the students grow and transform tremendously on both sides, and it really allows for an opportunity like what this documentary is talking about and all of the studies that expand upon it. The importance of narrative building. Students in that session, similar to any post-secondary educational course on campus, are utilizing the terminology in the textbooks, but really connecting it to themselves and to their own experiences. So I found that a lot of the students actually self-disclosed that they had been in the juvenile justice system, that they had been pushed out of school, that, you know, they had been truant, that
you did not know?
That I did not know. These are things that didn't necessarily come out, but in bringing the two groups together, it caused an authentic opening of hearts and souls for individuals to really get to have an opportunity to just see one another. And there was no Howard bubble. There was nothing to kind of hide behind. And it created a safe space for individuals to share their stories and narratives.
Rebecca Epstein, throughout the documentary, you saw statistics of putting in juvenile detention, suspended, sent out of the classroom. When you looked at these statistics, young black girls versus young white girls, it was often two times as much, three times as much, sometimes four times as much. As a researcher, you have to look at all of that information, right? You have to interpret it and figure out what it means. Is there anything in your research on this subject that you found that even surprised you?
The biggest surprise to us, as Dr. Morris mentioned, was how early the effects of racialized gender bias are being seen. So when we did our adultification bias study, we weren't expecting to see differences in perceptions of black girls as young as we did. We were expecting maybe to see it in high school at the time of puberty or adolescence. And instead, we found that adults' perceptions of black girls as not needing comforting or nurturing or protection to be significant as early as the age range of 5 to 9. And that was what was shocking, and I think it's why it did resonate with people across the country, because when we're talking about girls that young, that is the definition of innocence, and we're not seeing it. And speaking of not seeing it, the one thing I would add to Dr. Morris's answer to your previous question about why we haven't been talking about girls is that we don't believe black girls, and we're not seeing black girls. But the crisis is real, so we have a long way to go in terms of equity, and I think the film and the book of Push Out is going to help take us there.
Dr. Muhammad, when we look at some of these things and some of these issues, right, one of the things that fascinated me was there was an instance where there was a 7-year-old girl. I think her name was Samaya, Samaya, in the documentary. And she had been a good student in one school. I guess her family had moved maybe, and she went into another school, and the teacher treated her differently. And it got to the point where the girl was sent out of the classroom, the young girl, and she left, and she sort of walked the streets. She crossed a highway. She thought about jumping over and committing suicide. They found her at a Walmart. They said, "How old is she?" They thought she was 12, and they said, "Well, she'll be fine." Finally, they called the parents, right? But what I thought was stunning, too, was that the young girl didn't feel that there was a sense of understanding from her parents, that she felt like she had been bullied and been treated wrongly by her teacher, but her parents didn't understand that. What role can parents play in trying to figure out what's going on? What should they be doing to make sure that that young girl then doesn't fall into that pipeline? What would you suggest?
I would suggest that parents remain as present as possible. I think in that particular case, it definitely resonated with me. And I see it a lot within Black and Brown communities where parents are working the rat race. You know, they're making money, they're working, they're engaging. And a lot of the times you have school systems that, you know, before care, you're dropping the kids off early. After care, you're picking them up late. A lot of the times the parents that I've interviewed actually feel that the teachers know their kids better, that they could actually tell them something. There's this sense of self-guilt that this child that you raised and that you birthed actually is disconnected from you in a way because of the amount of hours that you're spending distant and not really speaking and engaging. I also think the voices of children are also suppressed a lot, specifically within families. There are a lot of Black families and Brown families I've interviewed that said, you know, children should be seen and not heard.
And that's an old school take, all right? 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. More of this conversation, the criminalization of Black girls in schools. Very important conversation. We're going to continue it right after this quick break. Welcome back to the Daily Drum on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. Our insight topic tonight is how young Black girls are being dealt with in school and how that might affect them going from school that pipeline into the prison system. There is a new documentary that is out. It's called Push Out, The Criminalization of Black Girls in Schools. It is a fantastic documentary, and that's the center of our conversation tonight. The executive producer of that film is Monique Morris, and she joins us along with two of our other guests. And Ms. Morris, I want to ask you something about one of the statistics that jumped out at me in the documentary. It mentioned that 7% of the 4 million teachers today, only 7% of them are Black females. What is the impact of that, in your opinion?
Well, 7% are Black overall.
Overall.
And so a smaller percentage are actually women.
Okay.
But you know, overall, I think it's important to think about diversifying the teaching profession, not to suggest that if one is not of African descent that they can't teach children of African descent, but there is a cultural discussion and affinity that is associated with the types of standards given the poor conversations that we've had in this country about racism and its vestiges that does seep into our schools. And so we do know that, you know, Black teachers are less likely than their white counterparts to use exclusionary discipline across the country. They are more likely to have elevated standards for Black children than their white counterparts, and they're less likely, you know, to engage in some of the behaviors that reflect an adultification simply because they're not familiar with the culture of the children that they are teaching. And so, you know, we included that statistic in the film not to call attention to the fact that there is a growing number of Black adults who are now engaged in other professions, but to really call attention to the need for there to be a rigorous discussion about how we uplift and maintain education as a critical profession, and that really needs the influence and engagement of more Black adults. We need Black people helping to shape the curriculum. We need Black people helping to shape knowledge and to structure new norms in the classroom. And that can't happen if they're not in the building. And so that's one of the things that we really wanted to share, because it is part of a strategy for building out schools that are reflective of the communities that they are situated in and working with and serving in so many different ways. And we want to see those numbers increase and have a much more teaching workforce that is much more reflective of the student body population.
I'm going to throw this out to any one of our three guests, especially in their last 6 or 7 minutes. We talked about some of the issues, some of the problems, right? Let's talk about some solutions, right? What's working? Who's getting it right? What organizations are getting it right? And I'll let any one of you three sort of jump in, whoever wants to take that first. I'll let Ms. Epstein.
I'd like to jump in if I can.
Okay.
And just because that is the topic of my new book, Sing a Rhythm, Dance a Blues, Education for the Liberation of Black and Brown Girls. And it is part of what is the foundation for the documentary Push Out. We included in this documentary not just a discussion about the problem, but also to try to highlight some of the strategies that are working around the country to interrupt this cycle. The good news is that there have been some interventions that are working in spaces that are some of our most challenging. What we know is that, you know, we having weekly discussion groups that engage Black girls in conversations about feminist theory, intersectionality, street fiction, you know, really give teachers a chance to develop a rapport with girls differently. Teaching girls critical media literacy is another way that educators have been advancing some of the conversations so that girls can understand how narratives are shaped about them and in the public domain so that they can become more aware of how to counter it. Black girlhood studies is something that I find particularly interesting, where schools and in higher education as well as our K through 12 spaces are really starting to understand what Dr. Dominique Hill calls a mattering project, or really how we come to understand what Black girlhood is so that we can really build out spaces that are responsive to them. Certainly, we want schools to be more responsive to trauma. And, you know, the National Black Women's Justice Institute, which is the organization that I am the president for and co-founder of, has partnered with Georgetown's Law Center on Poverty and Inequality to have a trauma-informed learning space. And maybe she can talk a bit about the network as part of that work. But I do think those are critical interventions, as well as just increasing our capacity to see our girls. They have, in so many ways, just not been a part of the conversation that when I first started having these conversations, I would just ask the audience to repeat that Black girls are sacred and loved. And just the practice of understanding that Black girls are sacred and loved means that we have to see them and we have to demonstrate that in our practices. We uphold that beauty and that sacred engagement, and often that is not what we get. So when schools do that, when educators do that, when programs, interventions, curriculum, all of those things do that, then we begin to see shifts in the outcomes for our girls.
Dr. Muhammad, I'll get back to you, Ms. Epstein. I wanted to give you an opportunity to talk about your own experience and what we're talking about. And I say Dr. Muhammad, right? But you had an issue, right, in the classroom as a young student.
Absolutely. When I saw the documentary, it really hit home and reminded me of things that I just pushed back and had suppressed as part of the struggle. You kind of, you know, brush it up. In high school, I told the assistant principal to close his mouth, and I didn't say it that nicely. It wasn't in curse words, but it wasn't politically correct as well. And when I returned to school the next day, I had a yellow slip, so I wasn't allowed in any of my classes, and it was an my expulsion papers. I was told to give in all of my books and that I would not be allowed to come back to the school. This was right before we were having a talent show, and I was one of the choreographers for a lot of the dance events that would happen at the talent show. And they basically did not allow me access into the school at all for the performance or to go and do anything. And I think the piece that saved me, which ties into how the documentary and the book Push Out really gets it right, is that I was loved, I was seen and recognized. And at that time, my mother and father had been separated, but he came to school that day with me to have a male voice to share in that discussion with my mother. And they listened to all of the components of what I said and what my side of the story was. And I was honest about what it was, and they believed me. They supported me and they walked me through the process. And although it didn't end in expulsion, because my father really engaged in a critical dialogue with the assistant principal, with me and my mother not in the room, they kind of ripped those papers up. And years later, I've seen the assistant principal and he apologizes, like, you know, that was a mistake. That was one of the biggest mistakes that I felt that I would have made in my career, because you are an astonishing student. I was a good student, but I was seen as just being disrespectful, and was, I didn't feel that that was something that someone should be expelled from, but I was ashamed of that story. That wasn't something that I wanted to share with other students in the school. It was like, once I made it back, it may have been my closest two friends that I talked about. I zipped my lips of it and just lost that on life. And it was that documentary that allowed that to reemerge. And I actually lectured on that today.
And at least the assistant principal got it right later, right? Not in the moment, but later. Rebecca Epstein, Monique Morris had mentioned some of the programs that are going on, things that are getting it right. What's your take on any organizations, any systems that are solution-oriented on the topic that we're talking about tonight?
Well, I plagiarize Dr. Morris a lot, but one of the phrases I'm most fond of borrowing is that schools should be locations of healing. And so a lot of the programs that she mentioned and interventions that she already outlined is a part of that effort. And I would add that restorative justice practices, trauma-informed practices, opportunities and space for mindfulness and meditation all help build community and systems of support in schools that can help all students. But if they are done in a culturally competent and gender responsive way, they can reach Black girls in a way that will really help them thrive.
Monique Morris, I'm going to give you the last thoughts here on this conversation, an important one, as our music is playing. I'll let you take us out.
Just that Black girls are sacred and loved, and the extent to which we demonstrate that is the extent to which we will see them fully thrive in our communities. So grateful for all of you for being a part of this conversation. Check out the film, check out the books. We're a community that is developing and growing each day.
Rebecca Epstein, is there a place folks can find you, or a website or any information?
I would encourage people to go to the Trauma-Informed Schools Learning Network on our website if they're members of school communities that are interested in learning more.
Dr. Muhammad, any suggestions?
On Instagram, I'm Dr. Muhammad _experience, and on Twitter, Dr. Muhammad 1. And if students are interested in sitting in on any of the classes, I do invite faculty, students, and staff to participate.
Monique Morris, executive producer of the film Push Out, The Criminalization of Black Girls in Schools. I recommend everyone see this. Dr. Bahia Muhammad, assistant professor with the Department of Sociology and Criminology and the program director of Howard University's Inside Out program. And Rebecca Epstein, a researcher with Georgetown's Law Center on Poverty and Inequality. Thank you all so much for being part of this conversation.
Thank you.
That's the Daily Drum on HR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday, September 10th. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. The Connection is next. Have a great night.